Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's the Crossover.
Crossover! Step back!
Presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen right here on 960theref.com.
All right, here we are, another edition of the Crossover Podcast, presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville, and in Five Points, Chris Brame from the Home Team, David Johnston from the Morning Show, and that is how you get the Crossover Podcast. We thank you all for subscribing on iTunes, if that's how you get us, or if you just log on to 960theref.com and listen to us on demand there. But better yet, it's never been easier to listen to 960 The Ref and all of our content than getting the 960 The Ref app, and you can find that in the App Store on the iPhone or Google Play if you are on the Android. So we appreciate you, appreciate Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen. And Dave, how have you been in the last week?
Say that again, Chris.
How have you been in the last week?
Oh, yeah. Losing my hearing, I guess, is one of the things. No, but as I do like to let everybody know, as we like to let everybody know, we are taping this in separate rooms, so we are, hopefully it sounds like we're sitting right next to each other, violating the social distance rules, but we aren't. We're in different rooms. So I think I can hear you better now. But yeah, doing okay, hanging in there. So glad we had the first round of the draft last night. It actually feels like, you know, Logan and I did the morning show today, and we actually had stuff to talk about that actually happened, and that was a good thing.
Yeah, and I thought bravo to the coverage. That couldn't have been easy to pull off. I watched I watched the first few minutes of it on ESPN, which was simulcasting with the NFL Network. So you had a combination of crews that were given analysis. I eventually flipped over to ABC when I realized, like, oh, they basically have the College Game Day crew doing that. And I enjoy them more, I guess, than the NFL talking heads. So you had Reese and Jesse Palmer were in a studio in, I assume, Bristol. They were at the same desk or whatever, but they appeared to be 6 feet apart. And then you had David Pollack was, I guess, at his home, you know, Desmond Howard at his home, Kirk Herbstreit at his home. And then, you know, they would mix in Tom Rinaldi and Maria Taylor some too, who were doing interviews and whatnot. But they pulled it off, and I didn't really notice any technical glitches or anything like that. It was good.
I thought my expectations weren't very high just because it was such a complex broadcast that they were having to put together. I stayed on ESPN. I didn't flip around, so stayed with that crew. I thought, you know, even from Roger Goodell's basement, I'll say this too about Roger Goodell, you know, he gets booed and he's the villain, but I mean, maybe you saw it differently, but I thought, you know, all things aside, he came across, if nothing else, one of the big winners last night. I thought he came across as more of a human being than we've seen with him before.
Yeah, I mean, they even added in the touch at the beginning where I guess some fans were allowed to boo him at the start.
Boo him for charity.
Yeah, so they had the screen back there, and for each team and their picks, they had you know, the screen set up behind them where, you know, a couple fans could get on there and cheer or boo if they loved or hated the pick. So
at least once or twice, I don't know, he was trying to do the virtual hugs with the players, and I thought that was, I mean, it's like, I get it, there's issues with him, but I thought he came across as more of a human being last night than he seems to at other times. But I thought the broadcast, they did a great job.
Yeah, and I don't know if there were any sort of glitches in communicating between the teams to him. You know, if there were, if there wasn't anything you were aware of on television, they probably just were able to, like, fill some time if, you know, we're, hey, we're going to have a few minutes before we can announce this next pick. But it, you know, I think some of the team, like, again, the Bengals should have, the draft should have started, and the Bengals should have immediately, we're taking Joe Burrow instead of
going through that whole 10 minutes, because the thing did end up lasting till, you know, right around midnight or a little after it. So maybe they could find a way to speed it up. But other than that,
yeah, that was my main issue, is why did the first pick come at 8:25 instead of 7:25? And yeah, once the Bengals were on the clock, why did we have to sit there and hear everything again? Why didn't they just go ahead and make the pick? It's like in fantasy football, you know who in your league's got the number one pick, and when you have your draft, they're usually, when it's time, they like make the pick.
Yeah, and if they don't,
you don't have to wait.
Yeah, if they don't, you basically like make the pick.
Yeah, you heckle them.
Yeah, we're not setting a timer for you. You just go tell us you know, and everyone knows, like, okay, so you're taking Lamar Jackson. All right, fine. You have Lamar Jackson now. But but it was good, and it was good to have finally some live sporting event to talk about. The draft is always great anyway, but you know, now given that there's no other sports, this was just as perfect as it could have been, and it was a huge night for the SEC. An interesting night for Georgia, which we'll get into, and then the Falcons were just sitting there in purgatory at number 16, and C.J. Henderson was gone. Javon Kinlaw went a couple spots before Atlanta picked, so the Falcons said, well, you kind of assumed when you look at their depth chart at cornerback that is certainly a huge position of need, and that's what they addressed with taking A.J. Terrell from Clemson. The Falcons love Clemson players all of a sudden.
Well, that's funny. He was the second first-round pick they've ever drafted from Clemson. The other one was Vic Beasley.
Yes.
So there's their Clemson and their first-round connection there with them. I was wondering, though, and look, here's the thing. We don't know. Thomas Dimitroff and Dan Quinn, they could have tried to trade up or tried to trade down. I mean, we don't know what was going on behind the scenes. But I thought when Kinlaw got picked, they might try to move down, and maybe they did. I mean, I don't know. You know, there was a cornerback taken three spots behind them with the Raiders taking Damon Arnett. But, you know, the Raiders are going to Raider, and they probably, I mean, I would think, hey, Damon Arnett, they were going to take him no matter what. Could the Falcons have traded back a little bit and still been able to get Terrell or, you know, even somebody else, even the guy from Auburn, although he ended up going number 30. We don't know. We don't know. So, yeah, the Falcons being right in the middle, I mean, that nice little four-game winning streak at the end of the year, whatever it was, came back to haunt them last night. And, again, it's so bizarre, too, with Kyle Shanahan and the Niners are the ones that get Javon Kinlaw. And then I even thought it was ironic that the Niners traded back into the first round to get the receiver from Arizona State with the 25th pick, which, you know, 28-3, and here comes Shanahan getting the 25th pick. It's just bizarre how some of this stuff plays out. But, you know, and Terrell might be a nice pick for them. I don't know, but it just felt like the Falcons just got caught in the middle of everything, and there was nothing they could do.
No, which is where you are in the teens, because I know the next pick was the Cowboys, and that, you know, that they're an interesting spot in that they had a top 10 offense and defense. So for a team that ended up 8-8, it's like, all right, well, something didn't add up there. And I guess that's why they fired Jason Garrett. But the Cowboys were sitting there at 17, and they went, well, we'll just take the best player available. And at that point, I think they did in getting CeeDee Lamb, even though with Dallas, you're like, well, why, you know, that is that what they needed, a wide receiver? But they went, we'll just take the best player available. I don't know if the Falcons, Falcons were 7-9, the Cowboys were 8-8. It definitely felt like the Falcons were, you know, had more issues and needs, and I think they at least addressed one of them. But yeah, Terrell was a guy that could have been had later in the draft. So I guess that's the, you know, that would be the biggest issue with it, would be where they got him. Could they've gotten him later? But like you said, you don't know if they didn't a trade. I mean, to make a trade, you've got to have a dance partner that's willing to switch places with you. And the only other two corners that did end up going in the first round, like, no one had either of those guys going in the first round in mock drafts. So the two that ended up not going would have been Fulton from LSU, and then I guess Jalen Johnson from Utah. So essentially the Falcons did get the top two corners in the draft were gone. So Atlanta got the third one in Terrell. And we'll just have to see how it goes now. I know there was a lot of reminiscing about him getting just smoked in the national championship game, but I mean, LSU, they smoked a lot of teams last year. So
yeah, I was thinking that too. It's like, all right, well, if you hold that against him, You know, do you also say, well, then Jamie Newman gets elevated numbers because he played most of his games against ACC competition? Does A.J. Terrell get elevated numbers because he played most of his games against ACC competition? I don't know. That kind of goes both ways to me. And I don't think Terrell's a bad player. I just don't know if he was number 16.
Right.
And, you know, that's the thing. And he's going to have to – to me, he reminds me of, like, when the Falcons took Trufant and, I guess, Alford in the same draft. And Trufant was the number one and Alford was the number two. Well, it feels like the Falcons got, you know, Robert Alford, but he's going to have to be the number one with Terrell is what that kind of feels like to me.
Yeah, because the Falcons' depth chart right now is, you assume Isaiah Oliver, who was a second-round pick, what, 2-3 years ago out of Colorado, has got one of the spots. And then after that, there was the kid out of Washington that they took in the sixth round last year. So, and that was where it hit me a couple weeks ago, looking just – I was perusing Atlanta's depth chart. When I got to the cornerbacks, I went – I mean, that's what they're going to take. They almost have to. They can't start a season with what they had at cornerback. And so that's what they did. And maybe there were a lot of rumors about Atlanta being aggressive trying to trade up. And, you know, maybe with the Jacksonville sliding in there and taking C.J. Henderson, we know why. But they just weren't able to do it because, you know, how many you would have at least had to have given up another first-round pick. Atlanta doesn't have enough picks in the rest of this draft to really probably entice anyone to move up.
That's right. And, you know, I guess they feel the need that they've got to, you know, win this year or their jobs are terminated. Although, you know, we've been feeling like that for the last couple of years,
right.
So who knows? I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that. But, yeah, I just think they felt like they were handcuffed and they had to take Terrell, even if that wasn't the guy that they had as their best available after Kinlaw and Jerry Jeudy were taken. But, yeah, when they got the Lions pick at number three and they took Okuda, I thought, that's interesting. So they're not moving down. They like Okuda. Then what happens here with C.J. Henderson? And then suddenly the Jaguars take him. And then that's when you start thinking, well, the Falcons need to hope Javon Kinlaw is still around or they're maybe trying to move up a little bit to see what they can do. And, again, we don't know what they were trying to do. I would think that, you know, Dimitroff, you know, his track record is he will move around. But they didn't last night. So I wonder if they just, like you said, didn't have a dance partner.
Yeah.
Or they felt like they, you know, they didn't think AJ was that much worse than CJ as far as cornerbacks went. And they decided to just stay where they were and go with him.
I knew when the 49ers took Kinlaw, though, it's like my thought was like the Falcons are like they're kind of screwed here now.
Yeah.
Because, like, what are they going to do? And, you know.
Unless you thought that they would want to get Chase on from LSU.
Yeah. I mean, I guess he would have been an option, but even he ended up going 20th. So,
yeah.
But yeah, that, I guess he was the other one who had been, you know, mocked to Atlanta a good bit. Early on, it was Epinesa from Iowa, and he ends up not going in the first round either. So that would have been a reach at 16. But prepare to have the dead horse beaten again. And I know the 49ers held the Colts pick. So that wasn't actually their pick at number 14, but Atlanta missed out on a guy they certainly would rather have had because maybe if they hadn't beaten the 49ers this year, they'd have been able to have Javon Kinlaw. Instead, they end up reaching with A.J. Terrell instead. And it's just, I don't know, those picks in the teens, those are rough spots because you're not awful, but you also weren't good, and you're just probably not going to get anybody that's going to have an impact and really put you over the top and maybe get you – be that missing piece. It's, oh, yeah, they're going to get me into the playoffs next season now.
That is ironic, though, that those wins over Tampa and San Francisco almost mean nothing because they still pick behind them in the draft.
Yeah.
So.
And now, you know, and I'm throw on top of that, now Atlanta's got a schedule where they're going to have to play Seattle and Dallas this season instead of, I guess it would have been – The Rams and Giants,
yeah,
it would have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. That's what people forget about, too. It's like, okay, it's 14 and 16, but it's not just 14 and 16. It's also two other games on your schedule that are, in theory, harder as well.
Yeah. And so last year, the Falcons took Lindstrom. The pick before that, the Dolphins took Christian Wilkins. So Atlanta misses Wilkins by one pick. They miss Kinlaw this year by two by two picks. And that's why when all the when there was all that smoke about Atlanta aggressively trying to move up in the draft, I kept saying, like, I know a good way you can move up in the draft, not win a bunch of stupid games at the end of the year that don't mean anything.
Yeah.
And but here they are, 7-9 again.
They won some battles, but it doesn't look like they won the war.
Yeah, well, that's what they got for beating Kyle Allen twice and Gardner Minshew once.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got A.J. Terrell now, who might be. I mean, hopefully he will be. He'll turn out good, but some of those Clemson defenders, and Grady Jarrett's an exception, but he was like the fifth or sixth round pick, but you know, those guys get into that nice system at Clemson with Brent Venables, and that's what I asked, like, how many defensive coordinators in the NFL are better than Brent Venables?
It's a good question.
I mean, how many can you even name in the defensive coordinators in the NFL can you name? But, you know, Brent Venables, you know, it's like that guy is as good as there is.
And somehow Dabo's kept him.
Yeah, with that somehow $2 million a year or whatever he's making
that
now.
That goes a long way up there at Lake Hartwell.
Yeah.
It does, yes.
The Crossover Podcast is presented, as always, by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville, also in Five Points in Athens. Chris and Dave with you. Appreciate you listening to us. Again, you can always subscribe to us on iTunes, listen on demand at 960theref.com, or download the 960 The Ref app. You can get all of our on-demand content there. You can listen to The Ref all the time, wherever you are, whenever you want. Find it in the App Store. If you're on the iPhone, you can get it in Google Play on the Android. All right, so we'll take a little time out here, Dave, and I guess we'll come back and talk about the couple of Georgia guys that went, and just the SEC in general, which broke its own record for the number of first rounders by one conference last night. Not only broke it, but shattered it by like three.
By the way, went under on the Vegas number.
They were right on it, though, 15.5.
They were it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. Is it fun? They were all – in fact, one of mine, and the Dolphins, of course, got me. I had Georgia players minus a half over Auburn players. So their Tennessee is they take Isaiah Wilson. I'm like, all right, I've got it now. And then the Dolphins take some corner that no one had going in the first round.
That's how it always goes.
Yeah, so that one, they buried me, of course. But I'm not mad because they made the right call and did draft Tua. So,
yeah, I knew you liked that.
Yeah, they got me. They made me happy there. All right, to the Crossover Podcast here on 960theref.com. And the 960 The Ref app presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen.
You know it's just a matter of time before you'll want some comfort food, like a big ooey gooey pizza or juicy wings. But you can curb those cravings with Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen's curbside service. Just go to fullyloaded.pizza and pay by credit card. Then once you arrive, call them with your name and car description. They'll bring all your comforting favorites out to you. Get comfort food curbside with Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen at Five Points in Athens and off Mars Hill Road in Watkinsville.
Crossover Podcast Part 2, our NFL Draft Recap Edition. Chris from the home team, Dave from the morning show. And thanks to Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville and Five Points for sponsoring the Crossover Podcast. Well, I get it. It's... the Dogs had two players drafted. One was a no-brainer. The other was maybe a mild surprise, but maybe there were a little more shocking to some at the one who didn't get drafted, and that was DeAndre Swift.
Yeah, especially since the Chiefs went with Edwards-Helaire out of LSU with that last pick.
Yeah, I didn't think a running back would get taken in the first round, so I guess I wasn't surprised Swift didn't go, but then as it turned out, a running back did get taken, and it was Edwards-Helaire. For me personally, I thought Edwards-Helaire and Swift were the two best running backs in the draft. I liked Edwards-Helaire over Taylor, Dobbins, I guess Cam Akers from Florida State. I think he's right up there neck and neck with Swift, so... the other guy too that for all these mock drafts was the tackle position, and you kept seeing Wirfs and Wills and even Becton from Louisville ahead of Andrew Thomas, and I'm like, Andrew Thomas is better than any of them. What's going on there? And in the end, the Giants made the right call and they took Andrew Thomas. So, you know, I thought at tackle the top guy got taken, and I even thought at running back, Edwards-Helaire neck and neck with Swift. He was injured 2 years ago with that groin, and he got hurt at the end of last season, too. So that might have had an impact in his draft stock.
I was thinking that also, the injuries, and then also the fact that just from a visual standpoint – Edwards-Helaire played in an offense that looked more like the Chiefs and sparkled more than the offense that Swift played in. So I think that probably helped him. That may have helped him there a little bit too with the Chiefs going with him. That might not have been the whole thing, obviously, but it didn't hurt him. You know, looking at a running back that played for LSU last year versus a running back that played for the Bulldogs last year offensively, those were two very different things.
Well, and with, you know, Swift obviously was, he could catch passes too, but I mean, Edwards-Helaire had over 50 catches last season. So those comps with between, you know, him and like Christian McCaffrey are, you know, I think pretty solid. And, you know, the Chiefs were, you know, in a spot there at the end of the first round, being the reigning Super Bowl champs, where they could pretty much say, like, we can get anyone we want. And in their mind, they got the maybe the top running back in the draft, who is also got, I mean, a lot less tread off his tires, too, than some of those other backs that had a much heavier workload throughout their careers. Because Edwards-Helaire is kind of like Burrow. He was like a one-hit wonder last season.
Well, how about, we were talking about the SEC with the 15 picks. How about the fact that 31 of the 32 picks were from Power 5 conferences, and there wasn't a slippery rock. There wasn't a incarnate word. The only non-Power 5 pick was Jordan Love. I mean, Utah State, I mean, they're in the Mountain West, so it's not like they were getting a D2 or a D3 player like that. So, I mean, I thought that was interesting, too, the first round with just basically all the big schools dominating with the picks, including the first three with Burrow, Young, and Okuda. It was the Ohio State show, even though, you know, Burrow was at LSU. So Ohio State got the headlines there for the first three picks. And then they did have, was it Chris Carter's son that the Raiders took?
Oh, is that who that is?
I believe that's what they said. I wasn't really familiar with him. Damon Arnett.
No, I don't think anyone was familiar with him.
So it was like, okay, this is kind of strange. And then, although his Wikipedia page doesn't even mention that, you would think, well, if that was his son,
it probably
wouldn't it say that? Maybe I misunderstood what they said. But anyway, he ends up going later on, and that's you know, another Ohio State guy that ends up going. But that's just bizarre that you had just one player selected in the first round last night that wasn't from a group of five school, or excuse me, from a Power 5 school.
I think the other thing too, to tie it into recruiting, the first 10 or so picks, like, you know, 4 and 5 star recruits.
Yeah. The only one of the top 10 that you could say, you know, really exceeded his expectations was Herbert. He was kind of he didn't get a ton of big offers. But
like everyone wanted, and Burrow was like the Ohio player of the year, ends up at Ohio State. Andrew Thomas, everyone wanted him. Tua was 5-star. Derek Brown was 5-star. Was Isaiah Simmons one of those that maybe like kind of blossomed at Clemson?
Yeah, I think because he played, because he's from Kansas, he probably wasn't as highly touted as he would have been if he had been at a school that had more, you know, more high school football, I think.
Right.
Was his situation. For him though, I mean, yeah, you could probably maybe throw him in there as well a little bit, but yeah, I mean, hey, look, Andrew Thomas and Isaiah Wilson were two of the top offensive linemen in their high school class, and they end up going in the first round.
Yeah, both 5-stars. And with Wilson, it's and I thought Wilson was going to end up in the back end of the first round. That's why I liked that Georgia to have more guys drafted than Auburn prop, but just because of his size. I mean, that was just going to be hard for NFL teams to look away from. But immediately I see, like, Isaiah Wilson is the first person to ever post these numbers at the combine and the cone drill and something else and get drafted in the first round. And it's like, okay. That's, you know, the guy's like 6'8 and 320 and didn't allow hardly any pressure at Georgia. Like, that's for late in the first round. I don't think that's a bad pick.
No. And again, I mean, it's not surprising. I mean, it could have, you know, we're going to see another offensive lineman, I would be pretty sure, go today in Kenley from the University of Georgia. So none of this stuff to me is surprising at all in the fact that these guys are going where they're going. It shows what Georgia's been able to do, Coach Smart and Coach Pittman, and I love what we've seen so far in the short time that Matt Luke's been here, but they're taking these linemen, and they're doing good things with them, and it makes it easier to go on the recruiting trail and say, yeah, look at Isaiah Wilson, look at Andrew Thomas, look at Solomon Kinley, you know, and probably look at what happens next year with Cade Mays. These guys are coming to Georgia, and they're going in the first or second round of the NFL draft, so come on to Georgia, and that's big for the Bulldogs.
Yeah, I had my one of my cousins in Cleveland was texting me earlier in the week because the mocks started to have Andrew Thomas go in there, and he was like, "What is this going to be a good pick? I don't know, it's going to be a good pick. That's going to be a great pick. I don't understand why he's not considered the top tackle in the draft." You know, and I started just running through a few of his career highlights here in Athens, which included, you know, I think he gave up like six quarterback pressures all of last season and 3-year starter. I mean, we know his resume, but I was giving it to him. So of course last night he was just like, you know, bleep the Giants when they made the pick. And like, well, like I said, I don't know why he wasn't considered the first tackle in the draft. So the Giants, it's as much as they get mocked with that Dave Gettleman for his drafting, like to me, like they actually finally got it right in a big way.
Well, they took Saquon Barkley 2 years ago.
Yeah.
They took Daniel Jones last year, and now they're getting a big tackle for Jones. So, and looking at like, you know, you'll see if you're on Twitter, like the Giants account, you know, hey, we just took Andrew Thomas, and then, you know, reading the comments from the fans, and they weren't as much anti-Andrew Thomas as they were, why didn't we go after a defensive guy? That was more of, I think, the rhetoric there with Giants fans. When the Jonas brothers weren't tweeting about him, I don't know if you saw that or not.
No, the Jonas brothers were tweeting about
it. The Giants put something together with the Jonas brothers, and they were touting Andrew Thomas. It was kind of strange.
Oh, that's good.
You can look that up. You can have a little fun with it this afternoon. But, yeah, so that was the only thing there with Thomas. But, you know, their fans were like, well, now instead of winning, you know, 31-24, we're going to have to win 41-34. And it's like, well, but at least that's winning. What have you done since you won the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I don't – you know, you just drafted who you hope is going to be your franchise quarterback for many years. So
yeah,
it makes sense to get a guy that's going to protect them. And Andrew Thomas will. So they've gone 2 years in a row because they took DeAndre Baker last year. So the Giants have fallen in love with Georgia.
How would you have graded Baker's season last year for the Giants? Like a C?
Yeah, he got picked on a lot.
Yeah.
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 I don't think that means he's doomed to be a bust or a failure. He's a rookie in the NFL, and teams went after him.
And, I mean, that may be what we see with Terrell and the Falcons.
Yeah,
same thing
for sure.
Because Baker was drafted about the same part of the draft, right? That Terrell was what number? Was Baker?
I think Baker was like in the 20s.
Oh, he's in the 20s.
Yeah,
okay.
He was a little bit. He was later in the first round, but yeah. You know, which is honestly where Terrell was probably, you know, more thought to where his prospects ranged around that area. But again, Atlanta was just in a spot where it's a position they needed. They were in a weird place in the draft. You know, maybe they couldn't get anyone to trade down, so they took the guy that they felt was the third best cornerback in the draft. And again, as it played out, those other two cornerbacks that were thought to be first rounders ended up not going in the first round, and he had two surprises going. And I don't even know how to say his name from Auburn.
I don't either.
But yeah, that guy who the Dolphins took, and then the Raiders just. I have no idea what that pick was other than the Raiders were making it. Because, I mean, one other thing about him that I saw is he's already 24 years old, which I get it in real life is not old, but in professional football playing, that is already, I would imagine the Raiders have got a good number of players on their roster who have already been in the NFL for two or three seasons that are still younger than him.
Well, you know, the Raiders are going to Raider, right? I mean, that's just – they're going to take the track guy, and they're going to take somebody else.
They had just the classic Raiders draft. It's amazing. Like, nothing changes.
I know. And by the way, that guy is not apparently Chris Carter's son. I don't know. I must have just been hallucinating when I thought I heard them say that last night. So the the cornerback from Ohio State.
Yeah, Arnett. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know where that came from, but yeah, it's just glad we had something going on last night, and I'll probably watch a lot of tonight and watch a lot of tomorrow afternoon as well. I don't know if I'll be quite as glued to it as I was last night, but certainly curious to see, you know, how many Bulldogs will end up getting picked here over the next couple of days.
Yeah, I mean, I think we know there'll be a good number that are picked. The big question is when, especially when it comes to Fromm. You know, I know Swift is probably upset about not being in a first rounder and especially not even being the top running back taken, but I don't think he'll have to wait too long in round number two before he finally gets his name called. And then, you know, even of some interest here, you know, Jacob Eason, where does he go? Who gets him? So, yeah, we've got we'll still have a lot of draft to talk next week on the podcast too, to see how everything wraps up and what the rest of the draft looks like for the Falcons too.
I know it's hard to we've already talked about Terrell, but I'll hold off on just a complete, you know, what I really feel, because I want to see what they draft around him too, just to kind of see what the whole draft looks like for them.
Yeah.
For the Falcons. But I know, hey, did you like the Dolphins getting the offensive lineman from Southern Cal?
Well, I felt like he was a reach too at that point, and they acquired both of those extra first round picks by trading an offensive tackle and by trading a defensive back. And so all they did was turn around and draft another offensive tackle and another defensive back. So
yeah,
in the end, it doesn't feel like it makes sense. But for me, their draft was made by getting Tua. And at least when they took the guy from Auburn, they traded down. So they've got a boatload of picks still in the rest of this draft. So Miami's got a chance to at least do some damage. But yeah, you know, I wasn't like crazy about those other two first round picks. But I mean, it was all the make or break pick was at number five. And like they tanked for Tua. It turned out that it worked after all. Yeah.
So hopefully he's healthy and ready to go.
Well, Dave, continue best to you and your family, and we'll talk again next week.
Same to you, and maybe one day soon I'll see you in person again.
Yeah, that'll be good. All right, appreciate you checking us out again. As always, subscribe on iTunes. You can listen on demand at 960theref.com, but get the 960 The Ref app. You can find it in the App Store on the iPhone, Google Play. If you're on the Android, thanks to Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville and did 5 points. We'll be back next week with probably another draft recap edition of the Crossover Podcast presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen here on 960theref.com and the 960 The Ref app.
You've been listening to The Crossover, presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen on 960theref.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.